Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knutson with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 98. We're getting there. Today's episode is going to be, and you might hear some wind in the background because it is really windy here. And so it's basically kind of coming in through the windows. But today's episode is going to be just about pointing expectations. Because there's a lot of different experiences and different opinions out there. So I'm going to throw out what I've seen over a long time and just to give people maybe some hope sometimes, or at least a little bit of clarification, because there's all kinds of ideas about it. And some of them are some of the things we don't know for sure, and then some things we do. For a long time, I would say in the 90s and early 2000s, there was this big thing where everybody was going to isolate the pointing gene. And everybody was sending in dogs' DNA, and there was all this stuff about it. And back then we communicated on forums and stuff, my contention was always, what other genes are there for behavior? If you can isolate that, then there should be a retrieving gene that you can locate. And to the best of my knowledge now, I could be wrong, there could be somebody out there with all of this all laid out in a paper that I've never seen, but there hasn't been a gene for retrieving. There hasn't been a gene for barking a lot. There hasn't been a gene for, you know, willingness to eat one's own excrement. There aren't identifiable genes, as far as I know, in dogs for behavior. There are genes for hair color and eye color and size and kind of ears and all of that. But in terms of isolating a gene for a specific performance, that has not been done. And I think that probably many of these behaviors that dogs have are not isolated to a single thing, but they are the result of a combination of different behaviors that they have and different programming that's in their DNA. And when those things come together with the right circumstances, then it's easier to get certain behaviors than it is, you know, to get another behavior. So, you know, I think that one, I don't hear that anymore. So I think people have finally resolved themselves that somebody can't find the gene and then just take over the pointing lab breeding program of the world. It's a combination of things, and I don't think we're there where we can isolate that kind of thing. And I don't think that would probably be a very good thing to do anyway, because when you start breeding for very specific things and ignoring other very important things, you mess up something that Mother Nature does perfectly. That's my opinion anyway. So that's the genetic part of this pointing thing. It is a behavior. It is genetically carried on, and it does so in a way that is not entirely predictable, as with anything in genetics. If somebody had this figured out, then they would be popping out racehorses, or they'd be popping out pointing lab puppies or retriever puppies or Australian Shepherd puppies or whatever that were just killer good. So there are a lot more aspects to this than people generally take into account. So when you're talking about your dog's pointing or lack thereof, there could be more factors than just did he get the gene from his mom and dad or not. And that is helpful to understand. So there are strong pointing lines, most of which, if not all, carry back to something way back in the woodpile there that was a pointing dog in my experience. And hearing the old people talk about what actually happened, they didn't start the DNA analysis until the 90s. And so anything before that was fair game, and you did not know for sure, unless it came out with spots or looking exactly like a pointing dog of another breed. So that influence is in there, and some lines have it very strongly, and some lines have it kind of hit or miss, I would say. And that's just the way it is. And so the only way you, if you're looking for a puppy, the way that you can go about hedging your bets to your benefit would be to get repeats of dogs that have been produced that are proven to do that, proven to point. And even that's not a guarantee, because in the pointiest litters I've ever seen, there's always one in there or two that don't behave like the rest. Again, this is not a sure thing. But that's certainly, if you know that this cross has produced a strong bunch of pointy, then perhaps you have a better chance of getting one on a repeat. You also want to make sure that along with that strong pointing, you didn't lose something else. Because in the beginning, when this whole thing was developing, because we were there from the get-go, we had some very strong pointing dogs that had a very moderate, at best, interest in retrieving, or else had a structure that did not lend itself to the cross-country track activity of upland hunting. So that's just another thing too. And all of those things factor in. A great big lumbering dog, it's very hard to go into a symphonic kind of point where a very light boned, as pointers are, kind of dog tends to have a much easier time moving into that kind of movement. So believe it or not, structure plays a part in this, in addition to a lot of other things. So you get your pointing dog. And particularly if you're new, I feel for you because every now and then I get on the American Pointing Lab Facebook page to kind of see what's out there. I can't stay very long because, I don't really belong there. And two, I don't want to see some of that. And I did it not too long ago, and somebody was asking about they had a pointing dog and they wanted to work on developing it. And one person was, he's getting, oh, read this, do that, call this guy, where do you live? And then one person went on there and said, you can train any of these guys to point, just get hold of me and I'll help you. And I thought, wow, that guy's got to be rich then. Because if he can get everybody's dogs to point, I'm pretty sure everyone would be sending their dogs there. And so there's a lot of that kind of information out there. So if you're a new guy and you read that and you kind of get going down a rabbit hole that may be hard to get out of. And I don't mean to say that insultingly, but maybe I do, and I don't know. It's just there's a ton of information out there. So again, I'm going to talk about the experience that I've seen and, how to approach this to your best advantage. So there's a lot of things to do to get a good dog that also points, which is what I think people should do. Get yourself a really excellent retriever that points. So you have the retriever brains, the retriever sensitivity, the retriever high desire to retrieve, the retriever high desire to work in tandem with you, and then one that also points. That's pretty optimal for people that want a pointing retriever. Once you have your dog, and you really want, the pointing is important to you. For one, I would say, and I'll just take you into my world because I get everybody's dogs. I get every kind of pointing lab there is. And I get dogs. I just sent a flat coat home recently. It's the second one that I've sent home that when I put it on upland birds, because I de-chase all the dogs and, teach, get them safe and in gun range in the upland field, and dog just locked up and pointed. On about the first couple of birds, it didn't know what was happening. And then after that, it started pointing and pointing and pointing. And so I'm sure the owner's going, what do you do to dogs out there? And it's like, nothing. The dog really does point. And so it was a really nice situation. So I've seen a number of flat coats that point. I've heard of some Chessies. I've heard of a number of Goldens. And then, of course, those dogs, the labs that we are actually bred for that. So it pops up in all kinds of strange places. And before, I've told funny stories about that. But let's just talk about when you go through the first year or two of your dog's life, what some of these roads might look like for you. Now, when you get the very strong pointing lines of dogs and you get some of those puppies, if you can, and you should, if pointing is important to you, put these little guys on birds. And as soon as they're old enough to mentally grasp and assimilate what's happening, which for some dogs is 8 weeks, and for some dogs is 16 weeks, and for some dogs it's 20 weeks, it's different for different animals. I've seen these little guys, you know, they put them, you put a bird right there and they just step on it, step right over it and keep going. And it never registers. That doesn't mean it's not going to be a good dog. It means that it just, the mind is not able to put all of this stuff together. It was just like a weird feathered rock that they went over. And then some of these little guys, when they get that very first convincing scent of live bird, lock up and they don't have a clue what they're doing. And that's pretty nice. And so if you give your young dog opportunities to, without intervention, and that's me, a lot of people disagree with that, without intervention, you let them encounter these live birds and let them figure this out on their own. When pointing is fairly strong in there, you can usually see it. Now, it may come out as just a lockup point, just lockup. And I mean, I've seen them where they stayed there for over a minute. And then all of a sudden they kind of like came out of the daze and then moved forward or looked up, or, I mean, they were basically in a daze, which tells you that there's a pretty strong pointing tendency in there. And some, it, so then you want to keep giving them a reasonable, for me, I think once a week exposure to that. What happens, folks, when you do that is they'll be pointing amazing and you're going to take videos and you tell everybody about it. And then all of a sudden, they start pointing less time. And then pretty soon, they start flash pointing and go in on it. And that's when everybody's real upset, right? And so, but if you knew that that's part of the deal and that's what happens, because they're also these retrievers, right? And if you got a good one, they really like retrieving. And so the go get it is fighting with the don't go get it thing. And so this is a natural part of this, and it happens. And if you can just wait it out, you know, still give them exposures, birds they can't grab. You know, you can't have a sick little quail down in there, so you're now teaching them to go in there and grab stuff. Or birds that are not that are not planted so hard that they haven't come out of their dizziness or their heavy plant. And so you teach them to go. It's just common sense stuff like that. You know, try to have birds that they can't go get. Try to have a birds when they move in a little bit close, it flies away. Now, I know this is where a lot of people use launchers. And I will still say an intelligent dog will figure a launcher out the second or third time. And now we have their behavior with a bird-filled launcher versus their behavior with just a bird. But launchers speed up the mechanical process of what you want. They do not speed up the natural process of bringing out the point without interfering with its natural style and stuff like that. At least that's what I found. So you do this. And if your little guy doesn't ever point, for one, in the beginning, if they don't register it at all, you know, just go, brain's not talking to anything right now. It's not all working together. Eventually it will. And at first they might be afraid. I've already said all this kind of stuff in a prior podcast. They might be afraid, or they might think it's dinner, or they might think anything in the world. And it really doesn't make any difference. But you continue to give them this exposure because it takes time. I don't know how many times I have had people go put their dog on birds and their dogs pointed or did something. Or I put people's dogs on birds and then I tell the owners, yeah, we got some flash pointing or some good pointing going on. And I'll send them a video and they'll go, well, how come he's moving? Can you make him stop now? Can you break him? And, you know, no, no, I'm not going to do that. For one, it's too soon. It's absolutely too soon. So because these dogs, there's an evolutionary process as they learn about themselves and they learn about the environment and they learn about the birds. And if you let that happen, and sometimes it's not the pace that you want, but if you let that happen, how they really are is going to come out. And if they're a good and a decent pointer, which is the only ones that should be bred, in my opinion, then the point's going to come out. And once they get it, but they're going to be, a lot of them, not all of them, are going to be really aggressive eventually. So they're going to catch themselves in this trance and want to go in on it. And there are ways that you can deal with those behaviors when the dog is far enough along in training and can understand what's happening. What people do that you see all the time in the field, and it, particularly in the competitions, is when their dog points, they go, great, he's a pointer. And so now we're going to get the cords, we're going to get the launchers, we're going to get the electric collars, and we're going to make them stay there. So if that dog is not ready for learning good bird behavior, if they're not ready, then when you go in there and you start correcting their behavior on birds, birds become the source of trouble for them. And so people who train that way have very mechanical looking dogs. And you might just depoint and dehunt a dog entirely with misunderstood training correction. You will just, you'll dehunt them or depoint them or turn them into a mechanical thing, which walks out, locates a bird, stands there, and waits for all the stuff that's supposed to happen. Okay, I'm not able to help any of those people because I just don't think that's what these dogs deserve. So it is, you need to understand the time factor. And some dogs, right, with bird exposure don't show point. Some don't ever show point and never will. Except they're 6 or 7 years old and they're a middle-aged dog now, and then all of a sudden that little bit of pointing that was buried in there comes popping out around the, I'm kind of tired and my shoulders hurt a little bit. And then the pointing thing can kind of express itself for the first time. Sometimes that happens. That's not what people buy dogs for. And sometimes just with time, it begins to show a little bit. Sometimes if they're no longer wildly excited about this, but very much into it, you might be able to see some of that begin to show up. One of the other things, and I can't explain why, that will bring out point is if you continue the more advanced training. It's very easy to steady a dog up in the upland field after they've been through the handling program. Much easier than before they've been through that. Because somewhere in that training, in the kind of the retriever handling stuff, where you force them to go and you force them to stop and you teach them to take casts and you take away the independent thinking from them that they have in the upland field, and you make them be very dependent on you, go when I say, stop when I say, go the direction I say, all very unnatural stuff, right? When you start doing that with them, so I can't explain what it is, but somehow over in the upland field, suddenly this new relationship that you have where they have a whole lot more of your involvement in what their behavior is from your handling stuff separate from that, somehow that goes into the upland field and makes the, you know, you're on point now and I want you to stay there. Obviously you will break them, but I'm just saying with that, it becomes so much easier. And many dogs I know have not even been well broken, but after they started handling, they had this, you could easily get them to understand, once you're on point, don't move again. And they do that. So that's a very, very useful tool to have to help, believe it or not, develop the pointing if it's done correctly. If it's not done correctly, I can't, you know, I'm not sure exactly what happens. But if it's done where they really understand and you have this new, more in-depth relationship with them, where you can stop them on a dead run 200 yards away from you and tell them to, whoop, stop, change direction. When you have that level of a understanding between the two of you, something happens in the upland field and it gets much easier to develop behavior that you want over there with that. So my point in all of this is, expose your dog to real birds that where they can establish an honest-to-goodness relationship between, if you're gonna, I don't know, a lot of people compete and they don't hunt, so they really don't care about the hunting stuff. But if you're ever gonna hunt real birds that are really trying to stay alive, that dog has to have a really good understanding about bird location. Knowing where they are, knowing what happens if you get too close, knowing what happens if you just have this mindless free-for-all running through the field, or if you're just plodding diligently along where you're told. They're not even really looking very hard for one because everything is so, so unnatural to them. If you want to hunt, then that dog has to establish this thing on their own. They need to have the interpersonal skills to like locate birds and know, I can't just go running in 6 inches from this thing. And the only way they do that is by getting real interactions with birds. And I know birds are flying away. And those are bills of money flying away. But we're talking about a major investment in a dog, and you want good pointing. So you expose them and let them develop this relationship. And it might be for some dogs who are just internally really wired very aggressively, it might be a while before that aggressiveness can subside somewhat and allow that less aggressive pointing kind of thing come through. So, and I've seen this a number of times on dogs that just didn't point, went through all the stuff, and then somewhere around the age of 2, they started pointing and were extremely good. And then locking that down and steadying them up was not a very hard thing to do, because you had all the bells and whistles and you just had to transfer that level of understanding over to the upland field. So I don't know why, but sometimes these very aggressive dogs, they just can't, the pointing thing cannot express itself with the high level of aggression. But when you control that with through all the handling stuff you do, and you teach them, this isn't just all about you go whenever you want. Sometimes that opens the door for the pointing to come through. But it doesn't happen on a snap. Right? It does not. So when you do, if you have a dog and it goes out and it shows you point, I don't care what age it is. Well, no, okay. This is a dog that's over 6 months. And this is a dog, you know, you've got him where they bring birds back to you, deliver to hand. They know they're supposed to be steady retrieving. You go out in the upland field, you teach them what gun range is. You teach them they can't just run anywhere. And you once they get where they, I don't care whether they're a flushing bird or a pointing bird, but as soon as they're bold on birds and they know the deal, then you de-chase. No, every upland hunting dog in the world should be de-chased. You de-chase them. So that way they know, boy, when I go bust something off and it just flies away, I don't just go chase after it. Right? That's a safety thing. There's only every reason to do it and no reason not to do it, to de-chase. De-chase is not steady to flush, folks. De-chase means anything flying by does not get chased. So if you're in one field and somebody else's dog bumps a bird next to you and it comes flying across, your dog goes, whoa, look at that. Not mine. And they don't even, it's just not a factor for them. So once you have that, okay, and then your dog goes out and points, and this is what happens. They go out and point, right? And then they can't stand anymore and they bust it up and then they just stop because they can't chase it. Let me take a step back here. Once you have the tools of extremely good obedience and a good understanding of the electric collar, not for punishment. If you do that, don't listen to this podcast anymore, but on basic obedience so that you can de-chase them, right? You have to de-chase these dogs. You cannot de-chase a dog until they are very bold on birds and you got a little bit of a problem. Right? Because they're out there looking for birds. You can teach them gun range. First thing you have to do. Then you teach them, okay, you got to go out there and do your hunting all within this range of me without me telling you every single time. But taking the responsibility. Again, I want to tell that people, when you guys go through the upland field, you can teach your dog that they are the ones who figure out where gun range is and the direction you're going. And they are the ones accountable for staying in it. Not you continuously reminding them, right? So that's step number one, and that takes a little bit. That requires basic obedience, then good collar conditioning with basic obedience, and then going out for a lot of time in the field without birds to teach them, this is gun range, bud, and you don't go out of it unless there's a really good reason. You don't go out of it, basic, and you take the responsibility. Once you have that, then you de-chase so that birds coming up do not are just not fair game unless you shoot it and drop it. And then if you have a pointing dog, if your dog is pointing and you get through this and they're one of those ones that points, goes in there and busts it up and then goes, I didn't chase it. I'm not going to do anything. That's when you use a very good wool conditioning process to teach them that they can't do that. And you don't do it in the field. You don't do it with a cord. You don't do it with electricity. You do it in your yard work where you teach them that stuff with birds, with guns, with all kinds of things. You teach them what the expected behavior is on birds. Then you go back out in the open field and you have a tool to communicate to the dog. Remember, you can't move. Once you go on point, you're done without ever destroying the style of this dog's point. Because if you have one of those beautiful dogs with the tail up and the head down, you don't want to screw that up with making them have to worry about stuff. Now, if you have a dog that is not pointing, one, you can go ahead, you can still wool break those guys just in case it ever happens. You can still de-chase and you do all of that. There are several means that some other trainers have to bring out point in a dog. So I offer you go look at stuff like that. I don't do it. I'm not comfortable with it. I'm just not comfortable with it. I'm not saying it's not okay, because I've seen it work with a few dogs. So I can't, usually for me, I like the dogs that show me that they are real pointers. And again, the reason for that is because if these dogs are going to be reproduced and they have all these titles on them because this person did all this really trick training to get them to do it and telling you what a great dog it is, I'm not sure, you know, that is necessarily a factual thing. So that's something to be careful of. So you can still, you should still do the upland work with frequency. It's important that people understand if you want a good pointing dog, birds are what make any good upland dog a good upland dog. Real birds, not artificial things, real birds. You can't do it on the nesting ducks down at the Greenbelt. That doesn't work. It just doesn't work without them. And it takes more than a couple times. It takes really a fairly consistent set of times to do that. Nobody gets good at anything without practice and practice and practice. And so when you go into this, you know, go ahead and go on the internet and throw out a question and get deluged with answers from 360 degrees difference all around you. You need to converge on something that makes sense, really makes sense, not something that sounds convenient, you know, three easy steps, or somebody that can do something that apparently no one else can do. You need to go through a program where you understand what is happening, one, between you and the dog, and two, between the dog and the bird. Now, this might sound, I don't know, it might sound hokey. I really don't care, because I've done it 1,000 times. The relationship between that dog and that bird is important. If you put yourself in the middle of it all the time, then there isn't really, it isn't about you. It would be like dating with your mom with you, like, all the time. Okay? That not good stuff comes from that. You have to let this dog go establish relationships with these birds. And they tell you what they're thinking. They tell you if they're super aggressive and not even considering slowing down. They tell you that. They tell you if they're not that, if they're not that interested in looking for it, or if they're, well, there it is, but I really don't care. They tell you that stuff. And that is the stuff to which you respond. Let's just say your dog just shows no point at all. Okay, so believe that. Just believe that. Right now, that thing is coming into his head. That weird trance thing that happens when these guys goes on point is not there. So the options you have, in addition to just continuing with some bird exposure with all the rules, is to go continue on more advanced training. So you get into their head and really make them focus and really make them do something than just whatever they feel like, or is, if your dog just does retrieving, it's just go for it motion all the time. If your dog does a lot of just go for it motion all the time and not much else, then that's what is prevalent in their head while they're out there. That's why I think that handling thing is so beneficial over there, because now we engage a part of their brain where there's not the go for it unless I say, and then when I say stop, there's a stop. And you have to defer to what I'm asking you to do instead of move and go whenever you want. And so that helps, I think, in some way, open up the ability for that pointing stuff to get stronger and get better. You can't jam it down the dog's throat. And if you can, maybe you can. And the style will reflect that. And the resentment will be created. Huh. So this is not just a straight line that you go down. But what the steps that you go through as you're developing your dog need to make a building sense, because this is a building thing. As with all other things that we talk about on here, you have to start with the fundamentals. If you don't have real good obedience, if that dog doesn't believe, I need to try and do what you're asking me to do, they sure as heck aren't going to do it out in the field, unless they're one of those just flipping amazing pointers that just points because that's who they are. It has absolutely nothing to do with you. But then steadying them might be a little bit of a task. But or maybe not. There's been some amazing dogs out there. The general population, not so much. You have to build this program. You have to start with the basics. You have to build off the basics. And one of the reasons that there's a lot more success now than there used to be, but one of the reasons that this has been difficult for people is because the balance between the retriever stuff and the pointing stuff is important. And understanding how one thing affects the other is important. And you can't just do one mindlessly and then just do the other mindlessly, because regardless of how well you're not connecting them, your dog is, because it's the dog doing its thing. And so it's all its world. And you need to make sure that all of this stuff makes sense to the dog. So just because the dog is not pointing early doesn't mean that it won't. If you give it the right opportunities, enough of the right opportunities, and if you understand that the dog takes time to figure out this very different world, and also make sure you keep the balance of that. If you want to get things done quickly, then you'll get things done quickly, and your dog will reflect that, and you will not have let this thing actually become what it needs to do. It'd be like in the racehorse world. You get a colt, good breeding, all that stuff. You go out and you're just running it. I'm going to run a lot, and we're going to just run it really fast, and then we're going to go put it on the track. Not exactly what you want to do on stuff like that. You know, the horse needs to be brought up physically and psychologically to understand that kind of stuff. There's very specific ways they're trained, and they aren't raced until they're old enough, both physically and mentally. And it's the same thing with these pointing guys. It doesn't happen when you want it to. And once you see point, it's not like, okay, let's just hurry up and, you know, just make this all happen. It doesn't work like that either. This is a process. And there is an evolution here. And it's not the easiest thing to understand when you're going through it the first time or second time. It just isn't. And a lot of times you're sitting there looking at the dog going, I don't even know what's happening. I don't know what to do. I don't even know if I want to do this, because they don't, you know, do what the guy on the internet said. And they're a living thing. And this is a process. And it's their natural world. And you need it to fit what you want out of there. And that doesn't always work. But if you can step back, like I've talked about in so many of these podcasts, and just take in the information from your dog and what they're telling you, and then think about it, that's really beneficial. And then go out the next time aware of where your dog is in all of this, and then know that this will take time, and just keep going. And a lot of times your dog will tell you a lot of stuff. They get worried, if they're nervous, if they're uncomfortable. What have you done to make them feel that way? If they're too wild and crazy and out of control, what have you done to make them think that's okay? So it's very important that you understand what's happening with that dog and that you have patience with this stuff. And if you have some superstar, bully for you, that is fantastic. I've had a few of those, you know, and you just look so good, and you just sitting there going, thank you, whatever made this happen, thank you. But that's a very small part of the category. So no matter how good of a pointer your dog is, get all the training in there and the de-chase, all the safety stuff, so that you don't have to worry about this dog being in a bad way somewhere in a hunting situation. Don't train them with other dogs so that they learn this is a big gang thing, all right? This is a hunting for you thing where they develop their skills first and later on can use those skills whether other dogs are around or not, hopefully that do not interfere with them. So patience is the key on this, guys. And it really is a lot of fun to watch and to go through, especially when it works really well. But all I can say is, again, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these dogs I've done. And now when I get another dog in and I start that stuff, whatever happens, I just go, well, looky there. But I take that in. I go, all right, this is what the dog told me right now. You know, this is awesome. They're going to go, their head spun 360 degrees because there's a bird there and they just went nuts about it. Oh, and just wanted to chase it and be crazy. That's good stuff in the beginning. And I'm not going to, there's not trouble for that. I'm just going to, as I can begin to exhibit control over them and they begin to find this to be a little more of a normal activity, then we can start kind of crunching in on a little bit on a lot of stuff. But this just takes time, and it's fascinating if you can sit back and not take stuff personal and not be in a hurry and develop a fantastic upland partner for yourself. So that's today's thing. There's just so many funny ideas out there and things that I'm worried about what the poor dog has to go through. And what that would look like if you were hunting to stay alive. I mean, would you have the hunter, if you had to eat, hunt to eat, do you need a dog that doesn't miss any birds, finds them, holds them for you, brings them to you when you shoot them? I mean, ultimately, that's the way we should train these dogs, is so that if this was for real, that it would work. And so a lot of the artificial stuff, not so good on that stuff. That's today's offering. I know we're all waiting for springtime to get here. I certainly am. And I hope some of you find that useful, that are kind of, confused about some of the pointing advice you get. And I will be back soon.